You're listening to the Berkshire Hathaway Annual Shareholders Meeting Podcast, brought to you exclusively by Yahoo Finance.
Now we're through with sort of the boilerplate resolutions, and this next item is of more importance. And we have put up on the BerkshireHathaway.com site some material relating to this motion, which I hope shareholders and others read, because it's important, and it's I'll describe it as the script says. The next item of business is a motion put forth by the Boards of Trustees of the New York City Employees Retirement System, the New York City Teachers Retirement System, the New York City Police Pension Fund, and the New York City Fire Pension Funds, collectively called the systems. The motion is set forth in the proxy statement. The motion requests that the company adopt a policy for improving board and top management diversity. The directors have recommended that the shareholders vote against the proposal. I'd like to interrupt the script here just a second to point out that when we saw that it would be impossible to have shareholders attend this meeting and traveling to Omaha and gatherings, which really neither the governor, the mayor, or the public safety people thought would be advisable. We were hoping to have somebody from the controller's office come and present the motion and then have a good discussion at the meeting of the pros and cons, because it's a serious, important subject. And I can tell you on a personal basis, I think I'm in sync with the controller in terms of how he wants the world to evolve, but I disagree on the specifics that this motion is applied to board generally and to Berkshire's board in particular. And we've been very outspoken over the years. We've probably written more on qualifications for directors than probably any public company I can think of. And we've been consistent over the years, and we've explained the reasons for our position. And we know a great many people disagree with that position. So I welcome the idea of really presenting to our meeting and having our shareholders hear what they had to say and evaluate what our thoughts were. And when we had to essentially not allow shareholders at the meeting, we immediately got in touch with the controller's office, and we said we'd make an exception if anybody from the controller's office wanted to come out and present the proposition or the proposal and engage in our discussion of the pros and cons. And as you might expect, they were not in a position to send somebody. And we also, so we offered, we may have made it even in the first place, we'd be glad to have somebody introduce the motion on their behalf, and that we would also, if they would send along a supporting statement, we would be glad to have the person that was their proxy, in effect, present the motion. We'd be happy to have them read the supporting statement. And we said we'd appreciate it if they keep it to 5 minutes or less. And they wrote back immediately or emailed back immediately and said that they'd be delighted to do it that way, and they'd even try and keep it down to 3 minutes. So they have sent a supporting statement, which it's going to be read to you in a minute, and I'm glad they did it. I do hope shareholders will or have already, and others, will read, will listen to what the supporting statement says, and will also read the original argument that they made in the proxy for their proposal, and they will read our reasons for voting against, the suggest voting against, because it's an important topic, and I really hope that next year, that, you know, if somebody from the controller's office wishes to come out, we'd be glad to have, even a more fulsome discussion of the subject. So with that, I will now recognize Mr. Hamburg to read a statement prepared by the controller of the City of New York in support of the motion.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, fellow share owners, I'm Mark Hamburg from Berkshire Hathaway, and I'm here to present Proposal 4 on behalf of the New York City Comptroller, Scott Stringer, and the New York City Pension Funds. The funds have approximately $211 billion in assets as of February and are substantial long-term Berkshire Hathaway share owners with 2.5 million shares. Our proposal requests that Berkshire Hathaway Board adopt a diversity search policy requiring that the initial candidates from which new director nominees and external CEOs are chosen include qualified female and racially or ethnically diverse candidates. First of all, we would like to commend the directors for the addition of Mr. Kenneth Chenault and the fact that 21% of the board is made up of women. We would also like to recognize that the executive pipeline includes diverse candidates, including Mr. Ajit Jain, another board member. Secondly, we applaud Mr. Buffett's recognition that women in the boardroom have historically been rare, and even more importantly, that although women won the right to have their voices heard in a voting booth a century ago, attaining similar status in a boardroom remains a work in progress. With our shareowner proposal, what we are seeking is to nudge this particular process forward. Thirdly, one of the things that Mr. Buffett mentions is that he only buys businesses that have three criteria, the second of which is able and honest managers, and that the most important duty for a board is to find and retain a talented CEO. We would note that in reviewing Berkshire Hathaway's largest stock market holdings of businesses, all 10 of these companies have boards that meet our board diversity requirement. In essence, the companies that Berkshire Hathaway has found fit to invest in are those that have more diverse boards. Fourthly, we would like to clarify that through this shareholder proposal, we are not asking for the Berkshire Hathaway board, our guardians, to have a quantifiable end result in terms of its composition, but that an initial pool of candidates for a board seat include a woman and another individual who is racially or ethnically diverse. We believe these candidates, if qualified, would also have very high integrity, business savvy, shareholder orientation, and a genuine interest in the company. According to a 2016 Harvard Business Review study, including more than one woman or a member of a racial minority in a finalist pool helps combat the unconscious biases amongst interviewers and increases the likelihood of a diverse hire. What we are requesting is a small step in that direction to include diverse candidates at the beginning of the search. Finally, we would like to applaud Berkshire Hathaway's robust internal CEO succession plans. Our proposal states that a CEO diversity policy should only apply in the case of an external search. The New York City Comptroller's Office is disappointed that we never had the opportunity to discuss our proposal with directors or management, but remain open to constructive engagement. In the interim, we strongly urge Berkshire Hathaway share owners to support Proposal 4. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Mark. And thank you to the controller for the for presenting that supporting statement. The motion is now ready to be acted upon. Mr. Jackson, when you are ready, you may give your report.
My report is ready. The ballot of the proxy holders, in response to proxies that were received through last Thursday evening, cast 65,925 votes for the motion and 485,824 votes against the motion. As the number of votes against the motion exceeds a majority of the number of votes of all Class A and Class B shares properly cast on the matter, as well as all votes outstanding, the motion has failed. The certification required by Delaware law of the precise count of the votes will be given to the secretary to be placed with the minutes of this meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. The proposal fails.
I move that this meeting be adjourned.
I second the motion to adjourn.
Motion has been made and seconded. The meeting is adjourned. So thank you. I'm just looked at my watch and I talked a lot longer than I should have probably. And that's not a unique experience of mine that just occurred. So now we're ready to have questions, which Becky Quick has selected from those that's been forwarded to her directly and from Carol Loomis and Andrew Ross Sorkin, and Greg and I are available to be, we'll be answering them for some time. So Becky, you're on, and I hope all the tech, I hope everything works.
Yeah, Warren, I should tell you that since you put that address up on the screen, I've gotten more than 2,500 emails that have been coming in. So there is a lot of demand from shareholders wanting to get in and ask questions. And I'll ask some that we've compiled before and some that are coming in right now. The first question, though, comes from one that just came in based on the comments that you were actually saying. This is a question that comes from William Lewis. He said, please, did I understand correctly, Mr. Buffett, to say that Berkshire Hathaway sold its interests in four different airlines? And if so, can you name them? Can the names of those airlines be identified?
Yeah, I wouldn't normally talk about it, but I think it requires an explanation. And it requires an explanation that means we were not disappointed at all in the businesses that they were being run and the management, but we did come to a different opinion on it. And they're the four largest U.S. airlines. It's American Airlines and Delta Airlines and Southwest Airlines and United Continental. And I think collectively they probably are at least 80% of the revenue passenger miles it is flown in the United States, and they have significant international flying too, excluding Southwest. So we like those airlines. The world has changed for the airlines, and I don't know how it's changed, and I hope it corrects itself in a reasonably prompt way. I don't know whether the Americans will have now changed their habits or will change their habits because of an extended period, if it happens that we're semi-shut down in the economy. I don't know whether the trends toward, you know, what people have been doing by phone. I mean, it's been 7 weeks since I've had a haircut. It's been 7 weeks since more than 7 weeks since I put on a tie or anything. I've been just a question of which sweatsuit I wear. So who knows how we come out of this, but I think that there's certain industries, and unfortunately I think that the airline industry, among others, that are really hurt by a forced, in fact, shut down by events that are far beyond their control. Greg, would you like to add anything to that?
Really nothing to add, Warren.
Okay. Well, we got another Charlie here.
I didn't intend to use that as a line, but, you've covered it well.
Yeah, we would have bought other airlines too, incidentally, but those were the four big ones, and those are ones we could put some money into, and we put whatever it was, $7 or $8 billion into it, and we did not take out anything like $7 or $8 billion, and that was my mistake, but it's always a problem if there are things on the lower levels of probabilities that happen sometimes, and it happened to the airlines, and I'm the one who made the decision.
But Warren, just to clarify on his question, he asked, did you sell your whole stake in all four of those?
The answer is yes. Yeah, when we sell something, we sell something, very often it's going to be our entire stake. I mean, we don't trim positions or that. That's just not the way we approach it, any more than if we buy 100% of a business, we're going to sell it down to 90% or 80%. I mean, if we like a business, we're going to buy as much of it as we can and keep it as long as we can. But when we change our mind...
No, go ahead. When you change your mind?
Well, when we change our mind, we don't take half measures or anything of the sort. So I was amazed at how, frankly, now we were selling them at far lower prices than we paid, but I was amazed at the volume. Their airlines always trade in large volume relatively, but we have sold the entire positions.
Okay, thank you. The next question comes from Robert Tomas from Toronto, Canada, and he says, Warren, why are you recommending listeners to buy now, yet you're not comfortable buying now as evidenced by your huge cash position?
Well, A, as I explained, the position isn't that huge when I look at worst case possibilities. I would say that there are things that I think are quite improbable, and I hope they don't happen. But that doesn't mean they won't happen. I mean, for example, in our insurance business, we could have the world's or the country's number one hurricane that it's ever had, but that doesn't preclude the fact we could have the biggest earthquake a month later. So we don't prepare ourselves for a single problem. We prepare ourselves for problems that sometimes create their own momentum. I mean, 2008 and 2009, you didn't see all the problems the first day when what really kicked it off was when the Freddie and Fannie, the GSEs, went into conservatorship in early September. And then when money market funds broke the buck, I mean, there are things that trip other things, and we take a very much a worst case scenario into mind that probably is a considerably worse case than most people do. So I don't look at it as huge, and I'm not recommending that people buy stocks today or tomorrow or next week or next month. I think it all depends on your circumstances, but you shouldn't buy stocks unless you expect, in my view, you expect to hold them for a very extended period, and you are prepared financially and psychologically to hold them the same way you would hold a farm and never look at a quote and never pay it. You don't need to pay attention to them. I mean, the main thing to do, and you're not going to pick the bottom, and nobody else can pick it for you or anything of the sort. You've got to be prepared to, when you buy a stock, to have it go down 50%. Or more, and be comfortable with it as long as you're comfortable with the holding. And I pointed out, I think a year, maybe 2 years ago in the annual report, just the one before this most recent one, I pointed out that there have been three times in Berkshire's history when the price of Berkshire stock went down 50%, three different times. Now, if you owed it on borrowed money, you could have been cleaned out. There wasn't anything wrong with Berkshire when those three times occurred, but if you're going to look at the price of the stock and think that you have to act because it's doing this or that, or somebody else tells you, well, I mean, how can you stay with that when something else is going up or anything? You've got to be in the right psychological position. And frankly, some people are not really careful. Some people are more subject to fear than others. It's like the virus. It strikes some people with much greater ferocity than others, and fear is something I really never felt financially, but I don't think Charlie's felt it either. But some people can handle it psychologically. If you can't handle it psychologically, then you really shouldn't own stocks, because you're going to buy and sell them at the wrong time, and you should not count on somebody else telling you is you should do something you understand yourself. If you don't understand it yourself, you're going to be affected by the next person you talk to. And so you should be in a position to hold. And I don't know whether today is a great day to buy stocks. I know it will work out over 20 or 30 years. I don't know whether it'll work out over 2 years at all. I have no idea whether you'll be ahead or behind on a stock you buy on Monday morning or the market.
Warren, the next question comes from Scott Kelly, and he writes in based on the numbers you just put up. He said, what did you spend the $426 million on equities in April? Was that adding to existing positions, or was that initiating new positions?
Well, I don't remember, to tell you the truth, but one thing you have to allow for. Well, these are the figures for Berkshire Hathaway, and they include both Todd Combs and Ted Weschler manage significant sums of money. So it could well be something they bought. It could be something I bought. But $462 million is not much money at Berkshire. It's more to Todd and Ted than it is to me in terms of our positions. But I literally have no memory of we're not doing anything big, obviously. We're willing to do something very big. I mean, you could come to me on Monday morning with something that involved $30 or $40 billion or $50 billion, and if we really liked what we were seeing, we would do it, and that will happen someday. If it happens in the market, we can't put it all in one day or 1 week or 1 month. It took us months to build up our airline position, many months. We were able to sell them faster than we bought them, but we were selling them at lower prices. The 462 is essentially meaningless, and it may not have even, probably was not mine.
All right, this next question comes from Lee Yandar. And his question is, in the last financial crisis, Berkshire acted as a lender of support for 8 different deals. Despite the injection of expensive capital through preferred stocks and securing warrants, these companies were, in fact, paying for the sign of confidence from Berkshire in the midst of a crisis, and that was invaluable. Today, we have QE Infinity, low interest rates, and hungry hedge funds. Even though the economy has deteriorated rapidly over the last few months, why have we not acted as a lender of support yet?
Well, we haven't seen anything attractive. And frankly, it wasn't predicated on this, but the Federal Reserve did the right thing, and they did it very promptly, which they should have, and I salute them for it. But that means that a lot of companies that needed money and probably should have done their financing a little earlier, but they're perfectly decent companies, got the chance to finance in huge ways in the last 5 weeks or thereabouts. I mean, it's set records. Some companies have come back twice, a number of very big companies that didn't bother to extend out their borrowings came a couple times. Berkshire actually raised some more money. We don't need it, but we'll I think it's still a good idea over time. And then there are some pretty marginal companies that have also had access to money. So there is no shortage of funds at rates which we would not invest at. We have not done anything because we don't see anything that attractive to do. Now, that could change, you know, very quickly, or it may not change. But in 2008 and 2009, the truth is, we weren't buying those things to make a statement to the world. They may have made a statement to the world to some extent, and I'm glad that they did if they did. But we made them because they seemed intelligent things to do, and markets were such that we didn't really have much competition. Now, it turned out that we would have been a lot better off if we'd waited 4 or 5 months to do similar things. So my timing was actually terrible in 2008 or 9, but what was available was so attractive that even though my timing was terrible, we still came out okay, or a little bit better than okay. But it was not designed, what we did was not designed to make a statement. It was designed to to take advantage of what we thought were very attractive terms, but they were terms that nobody else was willing to offer at that time because the market was in a state of panic. And the market in equities was in a state of panic for a short period of time when the virus broke out or spread in the United States, and it became apparent. And the debt market was frozen or in the process of freezing. And that changed dramatically when the Fed acted. But who knows what happens next week or next month or next year? The Fed doesn't know. I don't know. And nobody knows. There's a lot of different scenarios that can play out. And under some scenarios, we'll spend a lot of money, and other scenarios, we won't. Greg, you've been watching what's been happening around Berkshire.
Yeah. Well, I think your comment on the Fed, Warren, because as you know, interestingly, when it was first occurring, there were calls coming in, not the size of transactions we're interested in, nor companies we were inclined to act upon, but there was that general interest out there as people were in a difficult point in time, i.e. looking at their balance sheet and deciding what they were going to do. But the reality is those companies were not of interest. And post, basically, effectively March 23rd, the companies have been able to act. And Warren touched on it at Berkshire Hathaway Energy. Post the Fed action, we actually issued $4 billion of securities that was associated with some debts or obligations we had maturing, some short-term obligations we wanted to clearly lengthen out. And we pre-funded one of our capital programs at Pacific Corp with the thought this was the time to get the funds in place such that we could proceed with what is really an excellent opportunity, both for Pacific Corp, our customers, and ultimately for the Berkshire shareholders. So we've taken action within Berkshire, as Warren noted.
This is a very good time to borrow money, which means it may not be such a great time to lend money. But it's good for the country that it's a good time to borrow money. Not good for Berkshire particularly, although we borrowed some money, so yeah. We put our money where our mouth is.
That gets kind of to another question that came in from Mark McNicholas in Chicago, Illinois. He says, Berkshire itself has a Fort Knox-like balance sheet, but some of its operating companies may be tight on cash during the pandemic. Would Berkshire consider sending cash to its operating companies to, one, ensure that they can get through the pandemic, and two, allow them to increase market share while their competitors struggle?
Well, we've sent money to a few, and we're in a position to do that. We're not going to send money indefinitely to anything where it looks like their future has changed dramatically from what it was a year or so ago, or even 6 months ago. You know, we made that decision in terms of the airline business. We took money out of the business, basically, even at a substantial loss. And we will not fund a company that where we think that it's going to chew up money in the future. We started out with a company like that in our textile business at Berkshire Hathaway in 1965, and we went for 20 years trying to think we could solve something that wasn't that solvable. So we are not in the business of subsidizing any companies with shareholders' money if people want to do that with their own money, but we're not going to do it on their behalf. But we have advanced money, and we're perfectly ready to advance money. Gaining market share and all that may happen, but the companies that need money probably, market share is not their number one problem, I'll put it that way. Greg, would you?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's interesting when we look at our different companies as we went into the pandemic or we're addressing the COVID-19 crisis. Obviously, the first focus by our management team, and appropriately, was our employees and effectively making sure they're safe and that the business environment we're in, that they could continue to operate. Then we quickly moved to looking at where our customers were in the cycle, i.e. what was the underlying demand within the business. And to great credit to our managers, they very much have adjusted their businesses consistent with the underlying needs and demands of our customers. So effectively, they're moving with the customer, meaning very few of our businesses have actually required funds. Some have, and as Warren said, we've advanced the funds to them, but the businesses have really reacted in a way where they're managing consistent with where the market's at.
Thanks for listening to this section of the Berkshire Hathaway's annual Shareholders Meeting podcast. The next section can be found in the next episode in your podcast feed. Please go check it out. If you enjoy this podcast, leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts.